Some thoughts now on the calendar, the numbered days that measure out our years. I say November 28th, and you know it's Thanksgiving this year. I say December 14th, and you may wonder why. But if you're from Newtown, Connecticut, December 14th is a day like no other. We all expect to be reminded of the first-year anniversary of the deaths of the children and teachers at Sandy Hook Elementary School. Authorities are releasing a report this week on that shooting. But since that tragic day in Newtown, 30,000 people have died from guns in the United States, according to estimates from the Centers for Disease Control. The CDC also says that for children ages 15 to 19, gunshot injuries rank second only to motor vehicle crashes as a cause of death. Moments that become tragic marks on a calendar. August 24th, 2012, April 22nd, 2013, or September 14th, 2012.
My son became another statistic. And that was something I said he would never be. My son would not be a statistic.
Aisha Tyree speaking about the loss of her son Kaim on September 14th of last year. She is one of the voices in a year-long series from Kathleen Horan, a reporter at WNYC Radio. A look at each of the children in this city who died from gun violence over the course of a year. 10 dates, 10 names, 10 families. In Harm's Way, the series is called, from August 2012. To August 2013. Kathleen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So tell me about how the dates on the calendar really became families, people, real stories. Tell me about August 24th, 2012. That was the place you began this series.
Whenever there's a homicide, I get an email that lists a very brief narrative. And I learned that a 13-year-old black young man was shot in the back in Brownsville, Brooklyn.
And the first thing you learn is the name.
Just the name, the hour of the day, where it happened, and that this person was rushed to the hospital and that they died.
What did you learn about Ronald Wallace subsequently in this case?
That he was out with friends. He was doing regular teenage activities. He was coming back from McDonald's with a group of kids. And it was one of the last days of summer, and he was just out enjoying himself. And then a bunch of kids walked up and said, "What's up?" And he was shot in the back.
And, of course, he had a mom. This is you speaking with Ronald Wallace's mom back in August of last year.
He was the lightest baby inside the nursery. Chunky. He was smart. He was a smart baby. Like, who would do that to my child? He's not that kind of kid. Nobody understands what I'm going through. I'm hurt. My heart is hurt.
How difficult was it to approach these people, and how welcoming were they to talk about these people that they'd lost?
It was really difficult because you're trying to talk to people on the worst day of their life, and it's not a welcome visit. It's not a welcome visit at all. But over time and patience, the families did want to talk about their loss so it would be somehow less senseless, so people would remember who this person was, that they weren't just detail on a police sheet.
Oh, indeed, your reporting is about the remembering that all of these families want to do. They don't want to let go of these memories.
But it's a process. The first few days usually, or week or 2 weeks, families don't want to talk about it, and they resent that you would come and visit them because it just reminds them about what happened.
So tell me about April 22nd, 2013, a 17-year-old victim in this case.
That was Alphonza Bryant. He was also out with friends, just hanging out, enjoying himself. And he was also shot and killed just in the early evening.
And again, another mom, another loss, and another set of memories.
So I tell him there's got to be only three people that can go in, and this girl steps forward right away, and she says, "I'm his ex-girlfriend, and my name is Yancy." And then it was just funny from there, because then all of these other girls just started coming out of the woodwork, like, "No, I'm his girlfriend. No, I'm his girlfriend."
He just had the game.
He had the mojo. He had the mojo.
You know, one of the things that's striking about Janai Van Doten, who's Alphonza Bryant's mom, is a sense of acceptance. There's a certain kind of humor there that's as though this is what happens in our neighborhood. It's hard to listen to a little bit.
She's gone through many different stages, and she's joked because all of these kids were as weird and funny and complex as any other kids. And so she was explaining what a ladies' man he was. But she also asked the medical examiner if he died hungry. She asked if he had anything in his stomach. I mean, this is a woman who's been tortured.
What was the answer?
The medical examiner reassured her and said, yes, he had eaten.
What is the impact on these communities and these families in the sense that in a city that is supposedly safe, and the stats would say that here in New York, these people in these neighborhoods don't feel safe?
It really, it's crazy making because, you know, parents have told me they turn on the radio, they read the newspaper, and what they hear is that crime is down, crime is down. And yet their experience is much different. Not only losing their child, some of these kids lost their fathers also to gun violence. There's just a lot more evidence of minor and major crime where they live.
And even though you tried to bracket it into a year from August to August, even for you, the story goes on.
It does. It's not going to end. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, crime goes up and down, but how, you know, because these crimes happen to kids that are just black and brown, you know, just like it mirrors more of the statistics, you know, more than 95% of the people killed in the city are black and brown.
The two cities.
Right.
Right. A tale of two cities, 10 families, 10 stories, 10 tragedies. Kathleen Horan, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.